Okay, so a more conservative way to describe, to talk about the title is to say that I'm going to talk about quantum random walks. So, what's a random walk? A random walk, classically, is, well, we have a graph, and we have nodes, and for each node, there is some probability to go to the neighbor of that node. So the probability to go from the node I to the node J is described by Pij, and P is a stochastic matrix. So basically, we have some local simple step.
Stochastic matrix, you mean Pij is equal to Pji?
No, no. This is doubly stochastic. No, this is not even doubly stochastic. This is symmetric. But no, I mean, stochastic means that a distribution goes to a probability distribution. So the sum of the entries is 1. Okay, so basically we have this matrix, and we have some local simple steps. Each node goes to its neighbors every time step. And then we start with certain probability distribution D0, and we apply this matrix T times, and we get the distribution of time T is DT. And with some minor restrictions, this DT approaches a certain limiting distribution, which will be denoted by pi. So these are very general conditions on the graph, like it's not periodic or something like that. So apparently this very simple picture is very commonly used. So there are hundreds or thousands of applications for this. So I tried before the talk to go to Google and just count the number of pages in which a random walk appears. I couldn't, because this is not an experimentalist talk. So, but anyway, there are hundreds of applications. So, for example, what can you do with, if you can simulate such a walk on a graph, you can, for example, approximate a volume of a convex body. So if you can walk randomly inside a convex body to a random direction and just know whether you're in the convex body or out of it, you can approximate its volume. And also, if you want to simulate physical systems, if you want to sample from the Gibbs distribution of a physical system, you can walk on the graph in which each node is a certain configuration of the physical system. And you go from one configuration to the other by local operations. And then, if the limiting distribution is the Gibbs distribution, you can sample from it. And I don't know if you've heard, but approximating the permanent, so the permanent is, does everybody know what a permanent is?
No.
No.
So it's like determinant except all the signs are.
Exactly. So apparently the determinant is very easy to compute. It's polynomial in the size of the matrix, but to compute the permanent of a matrix, it's very hard. It's harder than NP, which is a curious fact in itself. But to approximate the permanent of a matrix, you only need to be able to walk on a graph, and, well, the graph is somehow related to the matrix, and since this graph, this walk, random walk, mixes rapidly, you can approximate the permanent of a matrix efficiently.
Are you talking about finite graphs?
Finite graphs.
And you're evidently talking about times which are sufficiently long.
Good. So what makes these applications so applicable, so common, is that, first of all, there is these local simple steps. So elementary steps, each step is easy to apply, or is elementary. And then there is the fact that there is a steady distribution, which is independent of the initial node, which you started with. So if you start with a certain arbitrary node, you get, and you let it evolve until it gets to close to the limiting distribution, you learn something about a global property of the graph. So you start from local properties and you go to global properties. And the reason why it's applicable is because it's in cases where this convergence to steady distribution occurs rapidly. So a long time in your question should be not too long. So rapidly means polynomial in some variable that you're interested in.
But it's bigger than the time of diffusion of water, or what time scales you're interested in?
So,
like Tower's time, let's say, to power the diffuser with the system.
So it would, okay, for the you would want the system, yeah, you would want to wait until there is diffusion. So, okay, so these three things are what makes random walks so.
So sorry, I didn't understand the answer.
So
are you talking about time scales, which are the time scales needed to investigate for the worker to investigate diffusively the entire system, or are you talking about longer time scales?
Okay, so mixing time. So what you're talking about investigating is called, in this language, will be called hitting time. How long would it take to a particle to hit every node in the graph? Yeah, this is what you're talking about, right? So this is very tightly.
One time is to cross the graph from one side to another, and this is diffusive time scale.
Well, okay, so you're not.
Not necessarily, of course, you will not touch each point.
No. So you'll have to wait longer than that. Okay. In your case, you have to define what does it mean one side of the graph and what does it mean one other side. So these things are related. The mixing time, which is the time it takes to approach the limiting distribution, is related to sort of the time scale it takes for a particle to move from one side to the other. But I think the relation is depends on the graph. I don't know of any.
Can you give an example? Suppose I have a regular lattice, finite lattice.
So let me give an example in three transparencies, okay? Okay. So you know, let me give an example now. Okay, so here is the promise drunk. And this guy wants to get home, except he has drunk a lot of wine. So he doesn't remember where he's going. He doesn't even remember where he went, which direction he was going last second. Okay, so every time step he flips a coin to know where he's going in the next time step. So he's randomly walking on this line, and we can imagine the line to be a circle, actually. And we can ask how long does it take for him to go to get to his home, wherever his home may be. And you can think of this more formally as a random walk on the circle, on the cycle, with a coin, and at each time step you flip an unbiased coin, you go in one direction according to the coin, and basically every question that you can ask on this, almost every question that you can ask on this walk, the answer would be n squared, where n is the length of the circle. So it takes him n squared steps to hit his home. So this is an example, and it takes him n squared steps until his limiting distribution is uniform. Okay, so that's one example. Now I want to take these random walks with this example in mind, and to make them quantum.
But still, in order to define the time scales, I think that the simplest non-trivial example would be a let's say cubic lattice in 3D with or without periodic bound conditions. So it's L by L by L.
Well, this is just L. Instead of L, this is.
It's a cubic lattice in 1D.
Yeah.
No, I understand, but one day, no, but one day is triggered. It's triggered. I mean, as long as your internationality two or smaller, which is different than the nationality is larger.
Of course.
So let's consider 3D.
But the
so
analysis
time,
would
time
be.
Go from one side to the other, scales like L squared.
Right.
And I think that the.
The mixing time is also L squared.
Is also L squared.
Yeah.
So you will not visit all the points during this mixing time.
Yeah, you're right. So. No, so I'm sorry. So it should be L cubed or maybe L cubed log n or something like that.
Well, you can go in the diagonal or you only have to go.
So, okay, let me stop this discussion here and say that I'm only interested in quantities which are either polynomial in the size of the graph and exponential in the size of the graph. So this is. So I don't know the answer offhand about the n squared, but there should be some factor there of probably n or, okay? Okay, so now having these random walks in our head, having this example in our head, I want to go and make these random walks quantum. So here's a natural definition of how these quantum random walks will be made quantum. Okay, so we have, again, the graph. And we will apply some unitary operation on the graph, which has a probability amplitude to go from one place to another, which is non-zero only on edges of the graph. So the Hilbert space is spanned by nodes of the graph. But we also allow an additional Hilbert space, which is going to be something that is playing the role of a coin. So, okay, so this H is going to be the Hilbert space describing an ancillary qubit or an internal degree of freedom or some extra dimensions which allow me to determine in which direction I go. So the general definition of a quantum walk would be the Hilbert, it's the Hilbert space is spanned by the nodes of the graph and the states of the coin. And the unitary matrix, the stochastic matrix is replaced by unitary matrix. And the unitary matrix is defined to be, it must be zero if V, it must be zero when it's connecting VA to V prime A prime if V prime is not connected by an edge in the graph. So it only shifts weights along edges in the graph. So we say that this respects the structure of the graph. And
the coin
is
a coin.
I'm sorry?
The coin is
No. This unitary operator operates on both V and A. We'll see an example in a second, but it's a quantum coin. So the state, after applying, okay, so what would be the state at time t? Analogously to the stochastic case, we just apply u t times, and we get alpha t goes to ut, u to the t alpha t, alpha 0, where alpha 0 is the initial state.
Different v's don't need to be orthogonal, or do they?
No. These span, these just index the basis states of the Hilbert space.
Is it an orthogonal basis?
Orthogonal,
so
yeah.
Then you say coherent states are basis, right? You can answer in 45 minutes.
I don't know. So this is orthogonal. I don't know whether the results apply to the case of non-orthogonal.
Sorry, so what's the role of the coin now? I mean, classically the coin told you where to go. Now what is the role?
In a second, okay? Okay, so before I answer your question, we can just say that various examples of the previous definition of quantum walks and actually modifications of this definition to continuous times were studied before for the cases of walking on lines and trees. And I just want to mention also the issue of which I'm not sure about the relation to the subject about which I'm talking now, but it seems related, so I'll just mention it for the sake of the quantum chaos people that are here, that quantum graphs have also been studied and I think they were introduced more than half a century ago. And it would be interesting to find out the relations between results in this area and results there. But to my knowledge, all these works did not analyze the basic notions that I've described in the beginning of a random walk, which is the mixing time and the convergence to a certain limiting distribution in a general framework. So did not give any general theory about what quantum walks, what characteristics quantum walks exhibit in terms of convergence and mixing time. So what I'd like to do here is sort of set up the theory, set up the foundations for the theory of quantum walks from the point of view of maybe a computer scientist or algorithmic point of view. So using terms like mixing times and limiting distributions. So
these are only asymptotics in some sense. The actual random walks have a lot more interesting structure than just mixing.
Yeah. No.
The
so
whole
so
spectrum of this matrix, which is interesting. So.
Yeah. So the reason. Okay. So the motivations for studying these quantum walks is basically trying to apply results like, so many results from computer science use the fact that mixing time is rapid. I think this is the most essential feature of random walks. And the fact that it actually mixes to a limiting distribution. Now the application would be trying to design new quantum algorithms or trying to speed up old classic algorithms like sampling, etc. Another application, which I think is useful to have in mind, is, well, a Turing machine, quantum computation is actually a walk on a quantum walk on a graph. Because a Turing machine is just applying a unitary transformation, which is zero only if only if you can go from one configuration to the other. So applying actually computing quantumly means walking on a certain graph. So understanding features of quantum walks might be helpful in understanding some features of quantum computation. So now we can go back to our example of the drunk and try to make this walk quantum as an example for building up these notions and the theory of quantum walks. Okay, so how do you make this walk quantum? The orbit space would be spanned by the nodes of the graph on the cycle. So there's n basis states. And then you add a coin, which is two-dimensional. And now here comes the answer to your question. How would I define the unitary transformation? The unitary transformation is basically flip the coin by a Hadamard gate, this gate, and then walk according to the result of this coin, except you don't measure, you just walk conditionally on it. So it's a unitary transformation. Okay? So this S, which means a shift, is shift your position according to the state of the coin or the spin. So basically, the unitary transformation is just a product of flip the coin and then go according to the coin. Okay? So this is our U, and this is what we apply many times. Now, the reason why we need this coin is because if you want to just define the unitary transformation without the coin, this is impossible.
So you have a state vector and spin all, which indicates the state of the coin, and then you apply this transformation?
Right. So I have the state of both the coin and the position, And then I apply first on the coin this transformation, and then on both the coin and the cycle, and the position degree of freedom, I apply this transformation. Okay? So, and again, alpha t is u to the t alpha 0, and we'll think of alpha 0 as localized. So we start with a certain specific node. And now I want to understand what are the features of this thing?
So physically, it means that everywhere on the circle you put spins one half on each node,
No, there's just one coin, and we keep flipping it again and again, except we don't measure it.
The coin is not associated with the sides on the...
No. There's just one coin, and that's it.
But if the coin is in an eigenstate of this transformation, then you will keep going either clockwise or anti-clockwise all the time, yes?
No. So the eigenstate, we'll calculate the eigenstates in a second, but it's not localized. So the eigenstates are actually completely spread. So it doesn't.
So what is zero and one?
Zero and one span the basis for this coin.
So in terms of spinor, it's a 1-1 or 1-1. So it's 1-0 or 0-1?
Yeah. Okay.
So if the coin is in the state 0-1, it will always be in this state.
No, because if it's in state 0-1, so suppose it is at some point in state 0-1, then you apply the Hadamard and then it becomes entangled. Then it becomes 0-1, then it becomes a superposition of 0-1 plus 1-0, and then you entangle it with this, so the state becomes entangled. Okay? Okay, so now we want to understand various basic properties of this thing. So the first question that we want to ask is convergence. What is this converged tip? Or can we speak of convergence? Okay, so of course we all know that we can't speak of convergence of the state because it's a unitary transformation. So alpha t does not converge to alpha infinity. Yeah, but this is clear. What's less clear is that also the induced probability, so for each state, there is an induced probability distribution over the nodes of the graph, pt. Now, whether this pt converges to a certain limiting distribution, any guess?
Guess, no.
Right. So no, because U is quasi-periodic. Because U is quasi-periodic, so PT, so alpha T goes as close as we want to alpha zero for any large T. And then if there's any difference between P zero, the probability distribution induced on the nodes of the graph by alpha zero, and P one, then this difference will appear again further in time, no matter how we wait. So this is...
If you sum over all times and divide by the time interval.
So this is our limit. We'll give you convergence. So that's a natural way to talk about convergence. And note, so we average over this, and meaning the sum, we take a random time between 1 and t, and we run the walk until this random time, t, little t, and then we sample. So note that we denote this by pt bar, and note that it's easy to sample from pt bar, because what we'll do is just randomly pick a time and then run the walk until this time. So if pt bar behaves nicely, you can sample from it.
Sorry. So does this mean that if you choose a random but large number of steps to go, that the probability of ending up on a particular node will be given by this PT bar distribution?
If you average over the random, yes.
Yeah, on average.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on average, exactly.
Okay.
I don't understand where the randomness is in your model. Your coin is not random.
No, no, no. The randomness is not in my model. The randomness comes from just the fact that I want to somehow achieve convergence, so I sort of artificially insert randomness into the model by running the process for a random time. So it's a unitary metric. It's a unitary process, but I run it for a random time. So and then I average.
So in random time, you run any number of steps you want, but if there is no any random, you apply all these Hadamards, so it's no random.
No randomness. But the, what I'm saying is that if I average, if I run it for time t and I take the expected probability to measure a certain node over t, over the time I actually I don't understand what's unclear. So I pick a random time, I pick t between 1 and t, and then I just run the thing until t, until little t.
Okay, this is unitary.
This is unitary, but then since...
So there is no randomness.
No, there is randomness because...
Where?
In the fact that I chose t randomly. So if I look at the average process over all t's, then there's randomness there. Yeah? Maybe somebody
can... What is the statement that... What property does p bar sub t have that p sub little t does not have?
It's uniform.
No. So pt is the probability induced...
Yeah, it's not
at
the
PT.
The one on the right.
P bar T converges to something.
Converges as T, as capital T goes.
As capital T grows to infinity. PT does not converge to anything. Okay?
You assume that large P is large.
Yeah. I'm saying, so the next claim is this. Is that under certain conditions, which don't look for a second on the conditions, the probability to measure a node in this process, in this random process, converges as t goes to infinity to something, which is the following. So PIV is the probability induced on the nodes by the eigenvector of the unitary matrix, by the ith eigenvector of the unitary matrix. Okay, so each eigenvector induces a certain probability distribution. PIV is this probability induced by the ith eigenvector.
And the AI is for the amplitudes of the original state?
Right, so if this is the original state, then AIs is just the coefficient in front of this eigenvector. So for general, so basically, for any unitary matrix, when you apply it many times, the probability to measure a node would converge to this thing, which is just the average over the probabilities over all eigenvectors with the weighted coefficients according to the initial state. Okay. Now, this is true conditioned on non-degeneracy of U.
So I missed something. When you go from one step vector to another, mm-hmm. can you accumulate a phase as well?
Yes. So when you go from one node to another, you mean?
Yes.
Yes.
Where is it in your constellation?
In Uij. Uij is, yeah? Okay. So note that there's something bothering in this expression, which is it depends on the initial condition. And maybe one of the most important features of Markov chains is that you start from knowing nothing and you want to forget where you started from and learn something about the global structure of the graph. Okay, but also note that if PIV, if the probability distribution induced by the eigenstates is uniform, then then we can just take it out, and then there's, then PT bar just converges to a uniform distribution. Okay? So if the eigenvectors are sort of uniformly spread, then we converge to the uniform distribution over the graph, which is exactly the case for for a simple random walk on constant degree graphs, which contains many interesting cases. So this is a desired situation, converging to the uniform distribution on the graph. Okay, so now this claim is very easy to prove. You just basically write down three lines and you get the proof.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Just a silly question. When you're calculating your probability distributions, you still have a state of a coin, right? You just trace over the state of the coin and ignore that?
Yeah. Okay. So now, back to our beloved example, the quantum drunk. Now we want to show that, first of all, the convergence is to a uniform distribution. So what we've learned from the last claim is that we have to understand how the eigenvectors look like. And that turns out to be a very easy task. So remember, the walk was defined by a coin and then a shift. Now, if we write down the unitary matrix corresponding to the shift, then it looks like this is the block corresponding to the zero state of the internal degree of freedom. This is, and this to the one state. And condition on zero, there is a shift to the right. Condition on one, there is a shift to the left. So these, and the I want to diagonalize or to find the eigenvectors of the product of these two matrices. Now, we know that the eigenvectors of a shift, or of each block, is just the Fourier vectors. So now we can basically guess how the eigenvectors of the entire thing behave. They would just be the Fourier vector on the position degree of freedom, tensor with some state on the coin degree of freedom. And then we check it, and we get that this is true as long as AB satisfies that it's an eigenvector of this matrix. Okay, so that's easy to do. So we've learned, so then if these are the eigenvectors, then they induce uniform distribution. Good. Okay, so one step we have. Now, the next question is, what about mixing time? So how long does it take the thing to converge? And we know that classically it takes it n squared. Okay, so here is a claim which I'm sort of, I don't know, how am I doing in time? Where did I start?
About
half an
hour.
Sorry?
About half an hour.
So I don't know if. Okay. So the claim is this: that the probability, the distance between the probability distribution at time t, the average, and the uniform distribution decays like this thing, this sum. Which is very frightening, looks like a frightening sum, but what I want you to look to see in it is only one thing, which is the distance between two different eigenvalues summed over all eigenvalues of the matrix. So how does this thing appear? I'll say it in two words and...
Because you're averaging over time.
Sorry?
You're averaging over time.
Right. So if it, yeah, so it's clear how this. So here in this PT bar, I just average over. I span the vector in terms of the eigenvector. I get lambda I to the t, and because I'm calculating probabilities, I get lambda I times lambda j complex conjugate to the t, averaging over time gives me this. Now, this, there's a nice thing to notice here, which is the difference between this expression and the classical analog. Here, all differences between eigenvectors, eigenvalues appear. So there is no special eigenvector. All eigenvalues are equal. Whereas in the classical case, there's, if you're familiar a little bit with random walks, the main quantity in random walks is that there is the difference between the first eigenvector, which is lambda zero, and the rest. So here, all of them appear. Okay, so now we can do a little calculation, which I won't bore you with.
Can you give some simple explanation for this?
Okay, so this is what I was trying to understand if I should do it or not. Explanation for this, for the proof, you mean?
No, for the difference between the...
For this difference? Well, basically, because classically there is just one limiting distribution, which is one eigenvector, and quantumly there is no limiting distribution. There is no eigenvector is the final answer. No eigenvector is a limiting distribution. So all eigenvectors behave equally. There's no preferred one.
Is there some limiting behavior by which you can go from the quantum case to the classical case?
I don't know. I guess there is. If you add if you add another degree of freedom and you increase the amount of entanglement between, so you weakly measure the coin. If you measure the coin each time step, then you get classical. Now you can weakly measure it.
If you flip a different coin at every step.
Yeah, but that's not a limit. So I think you can get a gradual thing by just measuring the coin slightly and increasing the amount of measurement. But I don't know how this will behave. Okay, so what this tells us is that we have to look at the eigenvectors, at the eigenvalues of our quantum walk. And okay, so you've seen before that this requires diagonalizing just 2x2 matrices, so we can do that. And we draw them on the circle, and we get. And what we're interested in is the distances between the different eigenvalues. Okay, so we get that the distances behave like 1 over n most of the time, except for on these regimes. So these are the eigenvalues, and this is the complex plane. Except for these regimes where the distances are 1 over n squared. But since there are only a few of them, we basically can assume that the distances between the eigenvalues are all 1 over n, and summing up and doing some stuff, algebraic simple stuff, you get that this distance between the probability distribution and the uniform probability distribution behaves like n log n. Yeah?
Since you have 1 over the difference between eigenvalues, that sum's going to be dominated by close eigenvalues. So how can you assume that the spacing is generally 1 over n, since the sum is going to be dominated by the 1 over n squares?
Okay, so the point is that the sum is, so the contribution of each distance depends on the projection of the initial state on the corresponding, under the appropriate eigenvector. But since the projection of any localized state on any eigenvector is just equal, it's 1 over the square root of n, then if you neglect here an epsilon of the eigenvectors, you just make a mistake of the size of epsilon. So this means that you get here to epsilon, the total variation distance will get to within epsilon within time n log n times some function of epsilon. Epsilon to the third, something like that. Okay? Okay, so is there a question? there? Okay, so this means there is a quadratic improvement, or this mix is quadratically faster than the classical case. Now, it doesn't look like the same quadratic improvement as in the Grover case. It looks something different. Okay, let me mention some related work done not on the circle, but on the line, on the infinite line, which sort of gets almost gets similar. Oops. Okay. So this is the quantum walk on the line, on the infinite line, and this is the probability distribution after time t, and it has similar characteristics as the quantum walk on the circle. Because what we see here is that after time t, this probability distribution is almost uniformly spread over intervals which are of linear length. Whereas classically, now these peaks you can ignore because their width is very small. So classically, you would expect the position of the particle to be confined in square root of t. So this spreads much faster.
What is the total weight under the peaks compared to what's under the line? I mean, it doesn't look like you can ignore them from your pictures.
I know, but that's an artifact of the width of my pen. I think it's t to the minus a third.
This is probably the scholastic.
I can answer in 45 minutes.
Probably your propagation is like solution of this. Simply you keep all the time a cosine theta multiply exponent of I t cosine theta, which gives you ballistic propagation on the line, and the solution is basically...
No, but this is not... This you don't see here a wave packet.
It's a Gauss... Yeah, it looks like it's Gauss kick of S.
That might be the case. I don't know.
I mean, classically, wouldn't you have just a Gaussian center at zero?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, if I ignore the peaks that I'm not supposed to look at, is it, what does it look like inside? Is it
the peaks?
No.
Or this?
Near zero. What is the shape near zero?
It's like this. So if you're interested, sorry?
Is it basically flat as opposed to Gaussian?
So it's averaged over something which is flat. But there are these...
What's the amplitude of the wiggles compared to the base, so to say?
Okay, you know, I'm not... I don't remember. I don't know. But I can... So these are results by Ambinus and... Nayak and Vishwanash and Bach and Waters, and I'm not familiar with the constants there. I just know that the total variation distance approaches a uniform distribution.
How is this different from quantum diffusion in a dynamical sense? If you have a small perturbing parameter and you have this, there's this spreading up to the Heisenberg, up to the Heisenberg time, and you get cut off classically, quantum mechanically.
And how is the dynamics?
The question is this different from that? How, this is just a fusion, right? There's quantum diffusion going on. So is this different from the dynamical case?
So how would you define the evolution in the dynamical case?
Right, so classically you used to have a diffusion, right? But quantum mechanically, you have diffusion up to a certain time scale. I mean, shouldn't there be a short time correspondence between the quantum mechanics and the classical mechanics?
What do you mean a short time correspondence?
In other words,
correspondence up to a short time?
You should follow the classical mechanics for a short time, right? If you look at the probability distribution.
This is, I don't see why.
There's interference going on.
Yeah.
There's no classical limit to
Okay, so... Okay, so this means that there is quadratic improvement in certain parameters, like mixing time, or like the time it takes to approach a uniform distribution, or like the time it takes to get variance, which is linear in the position, in this walk on the line. Now, people have investigated also a walk on the cube, and they saw also some improvement, like, so Alex Russell and Chris Moore investigated the walk on the cube, and they found that instead of convergence in time in log n, you convergence time in. So there is some improvement. So one could ask, how good can it get? Is there any graph where there is exponential improvement, or is there any place where you can get significant improvement? And I think perhaps the main contribution of our work is that the answer is no. So here begins the bad news part of the talk, which is basically summarized by the title of this. Transparency, there is a quadratic upper bound on the speedup. So for any quantum graph, for any graph with bounded degree, the mixing time and other measures of speed of the walk is at most quadratically faster, as long as the degree is less than a constant.
There was a preprint of Faria and others about a tree on which they claim exponential.
Yeah, I'll comment about that in a second. In 5 minutes. Okay, so. Okay, so how would we prove such an upper bound? So for that we have to go. So, okay, I can give you a sketch of the proof in 5 minutes. And to prove this, we have to go back to the results in classical random walks and recall a very famous result by Sinclair and Jeroen that says the following. That says that if we look at the graph and we sort of measure what's called the cut, or what's called or what we can think of as the worst bottleneck in the graph. So if the graph has a bottleneck which is very narrow, the mixing time in it will be very long. So we can measure the bottleneck by what's called the conductance of the graph, which is take any cut of the graph, divide the graph to two, and count the number of edges in one part. This will be this quantity, and count the number of edges from one part to the other part. And the ratio between them measures the bottleneck. So take the worst thing of that and call it the conductance of the graph, and the mixing time is bounded from below and from above by 1 over the conductance squared and 1 over the conductance. Okay, so this geometrical property captures the mixing time of the graph. Now, our result says this, that the quantum mixing time on this graph, on any graph that's not necessarily a circle, any graph that you can think of.
Any dimension?
Any graph is a dimensionless object. It's not embedded in space. You can embed it, but it's a dimensionless object. So for any graph, you can the mixing time would be larger than 1 over the conductance times some factor which depends on the degree. So if the degree is constant, it's just larger than 1 over the conductance. So the only improvement that you can get is that when the classical time is sort of in this range and the quantum time is closer to this range, which is quadratic.
How does the quantum coin work on a graph with more than two lines coming?
So you can define it, so if the graph has constant degree, you can just define it by some coin flip on, you add one, say the degree is D, you add a D-dimensional system, and say apply Fourier transform on it and then condition on it. But this is true not only for this definition, it's true for any general definition. Add any coin that you want, do whatever you want on the coin and the graph, as long as you respect the structure of the graph, this is still true. Okay? So the proof is the proof can be easily sketched in one transparency. And the idea is this. We define, instead of the conductance, we're going to define something which is resembles the conductance, which is instead of edges, use nodes. So phi prime is the boundary. It's the number of nodes that connect one side of the graph to the other. And divide the boundary, divide this number of nodes by the number of nodes in one side. So clearly, phi prime, the boundary, relates to phi by the degree. Relates to the conductance with the degree. Okay, and now, what do you do in order to show that the time it will take to mix is something of the, is at least 1 over this boundary, 1 over phi. So here's the idea. Let's start with a random state which is confined to be on one side of the graph. Okay? So we start with a random state in the Hilbert space spanned by these nodes of the graph. And now we notice two things. One is that whatever the probability to be in this side is at time t, it must grow by the probability to be in the gate to be at time t. So the probability of time t plus 1 is at most the probability to be here plus the probability to be on the gate. And now, okay, and now what we have to do is to estimate the probability to be on the gate in order to upper bound the probability to find the particle here after some time. Okay, so now note that if we start with a random state and we measure a random state here and we measure the particle, we'll find it in the gate with probability which is exactly the boundary. And there's one missing step, which is this is true only in the initial state for t equals 0. But when we apply unitary transformations, this can only decrease the probability to be in the gate. Because basically, we take a subspace and we just rigidly rotate it to another subspace and project it here, and the projection can only decrease. So maybe I went through this argument a little bit fast, but I think the idea is clear. The idea is that the probability to be in the gate is at most, on average, is at most the boundary.
This is an upper bound on what? On the time? Or
this is an upper bound on the time. So I haven't finished the upper bound. Combining these two, this means that on average, if we start with an average state here, on average, the probability to find the particle here at time t will be less than t times the boundary. So this means that there exists an initial state for which it will be small. If t is smaller than 1 over the boundary. Okay, so this means that it cannot be the case that for any initial state, you mix rapidly. You mix faster than 1 over phi prime.
This is, there will be states where the mixing is slower than that, but you are trying to find an optimal.
Right.
Optimal
so
initial condition.
There will be states, right. So I'm trying to find something which works for any initial condition, for any node. I want so mixing time is defined in such a way that you don't want to know anything about the graph. You want that if you start with a node, you mix. You don't want to know if this node is bad or good.
But I may be fortunate or unfortunate enough to start with some initial state that will not mix. For example, I can imagine some graph due to some delicate interference, is divided into two subgraphs, which do not talk to each other. So if I start with my initial condition on one of the subgraphs, it will not propagate into the other subgraph. So in that case, the mixing time will be infinity, which does not satisfy your.
So I don't know if in your example you allow starting with superpositions of states.
So?
Do you allow, is that a superposition? So when you start the initial state, is it entangled or?
There has been in the literature over the past few years, people discuss the so-called caging. I mean, there are certain lattices and certain magnetic fluxes such that the electrons will propagate to certain nodes and will not touch, or will have zero probability to touch other nodes. This has been discussed theoretically and also been demonstrated experimentally. It's quite true. I mean, it's a propagation of single electron propagation to certain lattices. So if I start with some initial condition where the electron is prepared in a superposition on one sublattice, then probably it will not propagate into the other sublattice. This is called caging.
This is lower bound on the time. So infinite mixing time is fine, right?
This is a lower bound or upper bound?
No, this is a lower bound. This is a lower bound in the speed up. This is saying that the mixing time is at least, will take at least something. Okay, does this answer the question? Thank you, okay. So this means that the mixing time will take, this means that there is no probability to measure here if t is smaller than 1 over phi prime. So in order for the mixing time to be a mixing time, we have to wait until the probability to measure something here is significant. So this means that the mixing time is at least 1 over the boundary. Okay, so to summarize the last 5 minutes, what we've shown is that the mixing time quantumly is at least 1 over the boundary, which is related to the classical case, is at most quadratically faster for bounded degree class. Now, I'm coming back to another question that you asked before, talking about other mixing times, other mixing measures. So mixing time is this measure when this probability distribution gets close to the uniform probability distribution. Now you can define other mixing measures, and I'm not going to define them, but one of them, okay, but I'll just wave my hands and say, one of them is probability, is for example, how long it takes for the state to just at least visit a certain node with something which is close to the correct probability. And how long does it take to escape a certain set of nodes? And, so all these things have analogs in the classical literature. And for all these things, we have our lower bound, which is quadratic. So now let me stress one very important point. The fact that quantum random walks mix at most quadratically faster than classical walks, the fact that there is only a speed up of a quadratic speed up should make you jump because of what I said half an hour ago, which is that Turing machine, a walk on a Turing machine, quantum computation, is actually a quantum walk. So does this mean that any walk on a Turing machine walks at most quadratically faster? No, because of what we said before, because talks about the average case, or the mixing time for any node, and in order to get real improvement or significant difference between the quantum and the classical case, we need to talk about specific walks on the graph. So specific paths between two nodes. So to your question from before, Fahy and Gutmann and who else was that? Remember? And Andrew Childs came up with an example in which they designed a graph, a tree, and if you start with one point and you let the particle propagate, you can find, classically, the particle will not propagate, will take exponential time to propagate to the other side of the graph. Quantumly, it takes polynomial time. So first of all, these are specific two nodes in an exponential size graph, so the overall mixing time will not be faster. And secondly, there is a classical lock that does exactly what they do. It's just a side remark, but they compare it to a simple random walk, but if you just add a bias, then a classical walk does exactly the same thing. Okay, so let me conclude. So we started with a random, with our classical drunk, and we've seen that if we add, if we allow it to be a quantum drunk, it can walk quadratically faster, but not more than quadratically faster, except for maybe graphs with a high degree, which is not known yet. And there are clear questions like, okay, what kind of graphs will give us the quadratic advantage? And what about other mixing notions? But I think there are two very important open problems which are not straightforward open problems. I would like to highlight those. So one important open problem is that, first of all, we don't know how to use these algorithms, these speedups, even the quadratic speedups, we don't know how to use in classical algorithms. So everybody knows how to sample from a cycle without walking on the cycle. You don't need a random walk on the cycle in order to do that. So there's no advantage in, at least algorithmically, in a quantum walk on, I mean, from a quantum walk on the cycle. So find a way to use random walks or speed, even quadratic speedup, in algorithms. But the interesting question is, quantum, so classical walks, in the analysis of algorithms that use classical walks, it's not always true that mixing time is the only parameter that gets into it. So for example, Schoening recently came up with an algorithm to solve 3-sat, an NP-quad problem, NP-complete problem, in time which is 4 over 3 to the n, where n is the number of variables, instead of the 2 to the n clear, straightforward algorithm. And the, in the analysis, he uses a random walk, but he doesn't need the mixing time of a random walk. What he needs is a specific feature of the of the limiting probability distribution that he gets in a certain random walk that he's using. So the fact that quantum walks can have different probability, different limiting probability distributions, might play a role in designing new quantum algorithms. Okay, that's one important question, I think. And the other important question is this. So it's state generation. So I don't know how many of you know, but graph isomorphism is okay. So it has been one of the holy grails in quantum computation for quantum computation people trying to solve the question of whether two input graphs are isomorphic or not in polynomial time. Classically, it's not known to be. There is no known efficient algorithm to do that. And I don't know how many of you know that this problem can be reduced to the problem of generating a specific state. So given the graph, in terms of the adjacency matrix of the graph, 0 if there is an edge, 1 if there is no edge, given this graph, if you can generate a superposition over all graphs which are isomorphic to this graph, then you solve graph isomorphism. That's easy to see, because if the two graphs are isomorphic, then these two states are the same. If they're not isomorphic, then these two states are orthogonal. So using a little interference circuit, you can distinguish between the two. So graph isomorphism can be reduced to state generation. And the question I'd like to pose is, which is more of a fantasy than a question, is how to generate, how to use Markov chains or random, quantum random walks in order to generate interesting states. So for example, here I could imagine walking on a graph and the nodes of which are all graphs isomorphic to the original graph. But this is not the only question that we can think of, and this is not the only interesting state. So analyzing how can quantum locks be used to generate interesting quantum states is an interesting open problem. Thanks.